Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spech.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic.
What's up? What's new? What's happening? What's shaking? What's doing? What it is, what it was, what it always shall be.
Wow. Did you just have a coffee?
No, I think I just had a brain aneurysm or something there.
Well, I'm excited. It's starting to get warmer. I'm hoping for more warm, but
it's getting chilly in the evenings, but like,
I know, it's
t-shirt weather still.
Yeah.
Maybe a hoodie if you need one. But definitely the warm,
yeah,
warm clothes are away.
I'm going to visit family in New Brunswick this weekend, and while we're there, it's going to be 28 degrees.
See?
St. John, New Brunswick.
Summer.
But.
Summertime when the weather is fine.
35 millimeters
of rain?
Of rain on like Friday, Saturday.
You know what the good thing about rain is? You don't have to shovel it.
This is true.
Right?
This is true.
Yeah. It's a good thing.
We were talking at work. We're talking about Moosney Moose Factory and some of the rivers going into there. And in the conversation, as I was talking to them about it, and they said, well, it kind of snows year-round up there, doesn't it? I said, no. It's going to snow for most of the year. So you got a snow season and a bug season.
Mm-hmm.
In the winter, it's really thick with snow. In the summer, it's really thick with bugs.
Because we were up there September.
Late September, early October, yeah. Weren't you? Because yeah, you were outside the normal season.
Yeah. Was no snow yet.
Yeah. But there's lots
of
bugs.
The snow wasn't. Well, there wasn't that time.
Yeah. Oh, too windy. Yeah, very windy, wasn't it?
Too windy, yeah. But yeah, the snows were still a few weeks off at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's no wonder the trees are so stunted up there. Eh? It's just such a short growing season.
Yeah, well, they're not too short there. But as you get farther from mm-hmm. north from there,
yeah,
they start stunting, yeah.
But, anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, it's that time.
Mm-hmm.
My boss came in my office. When are you going away? August. For how long? 3 weeks. Hey. It's too late now, buddy. It's too late now.
It sounds like
no take backsies.
It sounds like a conversation me and you have occasionally.
Right?
You'll go, wait, when are you going away again? Well, Sean. Or sometimes it's like, what do you mean you're going away? Oh, yeah. Sorry, Sean. I didn't tell you.
I forgot to tell you I'm away next week. Yeah, you forgot to tell me. Yeah. So 9 times out of 10, if we have a special guest replacing Derek, he didn't tell me.
Oh, no. I got
to. Yeah. This week's guest is not Derek.
We need a guest host.
Oy vey. Yeah. No, looking forward to getting out. I'm still fighting this back thing, eh?
Yeah.
It's moved into my one hip.
I do see your hip limping around.
Yeah, it's weird. I've never had it like this before. So it's like this is good. This is cool. It's getting mm-hmm. better. And then all of a sudden it's like circled around from the back to the hip and
mm-hmm.
down into the leg. And what the heck? So I'm just going to go for an operation that cuts myself off at the waist.
Yeah, there you go.
No more back, lower back problem. Kayaking is going to be so much easier.
I know, right?
Yeah, can't wait. But yeah, I've been trying to get, and I mean, we got things you do in the spring here to get your outside ready for summer and that.
Exactly, yeah.
Do fixing this and fixing that and mowing lawns. And so you say, oh, I'm just going to give things a rest right now so I can get out and do some canoeing.
Mm-hmm.
No, that doesn't happen, you know. And you're taking people places. And mind you, Tracy did the Bike for Brain Health thing downtown Toronto on the weekend. They shut down the Gardner in the Don Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for dementia and Alzheimer's.
Okay.
So she does that the last few years. And so like thousands of people riding their bikes.
Hmm.
And there I am sitting on my ass in my truck. Watching them all go.
go, people.
See you, people. Have fun. Go. Yay. Yay, you.
I will live vicariously through you.
Yeah. As you know what? She goes out with one of her friends and they go bike up the Don Valley and
nice.
Through the city there and
yeah.
the Gardner and back for a few hours.
I was listening to, so we listen to Indy 88 a lot of the time, or my wife does. And so the announcers throughout the weekend were saying, if you came downtown on Friday, well, you live here now.
Yep.
And if you want to come downtown now, you're not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole weekend it was that, because it was the Gardner's being chewed up, the Don Valley was shut down. There's so much construction everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
He said there's no clear route across the city.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize there was that bike thing.
Yeah, that's why the Don Valley.
Yeah.
And I said, I'll tell you right now, the Jays aren't in town. Well, how do you know?
Because they wouldn't do this.
Because they wouldn't shut the Don Valley down, because no one would be there.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, or there would be a whole lot of run-over bicyclists, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I will say that there was way too much spandex at that event.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. Full body suits, colorful. Yeah. Yeah, there's just images burned in my brain I did not need to see.
When's the World Cup in Toronto? Is that 2026?
Sure, why not?
Because it's in Toronto.
That's going to be a nightmare.
Yeah, it's going to be in Toronto, Montreal, and a couple places in the States. And so along with that, it's like, hey, if you want to pick a time to go on a paddling vacation, get out of town. Because apparently that they're even shutting down all the city of Toronto, shutting down all construction during World Cup.
They'd have to.
Because they can't be closing roads.
The same with if the Olympics ever came to town.
Yeah.
They'd have to shut all.
Yeah.
Like every artery in the city would have to be wide open and clear.
Yeah.
Because there is no way that they could host something like the Olympics
or
the World Cup with the daily day-to-day crap that goes on.
I don't know how many times I've heard stories about some team bus, either NHL or MLB or somebody. It's like, yeah, look at that. They just unloaded the bus. The entire team with their bags are walking down the street to get to the stadium because traffic is not moving.
It's that bad, yeah.
And they're going to be late for start time. And there's a TV schedule to keep. So
Yeah. But I was parked right outside BMO field there.
Huh?
Well, they went and did their thing, so.
Nice.
Eh, it's
Wait,
good.
BMO Field?
Yeah.
You said Don Valley.
They were on the Don Valley. I wasn't.
Oh.
I was parked in a parking lot at BMO Field. That's
okay.
Where it started.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, I'm just whiling away my time, reading books and checking emails. Yeah.
You could have gone for a paddle in the around Ontario Place then.
It was windy, but I did see one kayaker out there.
Yeah.
But the lake was a bit rough, so I'm like, nah. Because by the time I got in, got the suit on and all that sort of stuff, I wouldn't have much time to paddle before I had to come back, put it all back
They'd
on.
They'd be done.
And then get back to pick her up. So, but it was good. Looking forward to doing some. I used to ride bikes all the time as a kid and then as a young adult.
Yeah.
And then it just sort of just wasn't doing it for me. It just didn't appeal to me anymore.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of people that still enjoy it. There's a bunch of guys at work that are
Yeah, I just saw like 8,000 of them.
But yeah, I think you really got to, it's about the groups that you keep. Like I tend to hang out with a paddling crowd these days. So I've lost interest in the pedaling crowd.
Yeah.
I went from pedaling to paddling.
Well, I had a bike. I had a good mountain bike still that it's just like, you know what? It just sat there and sat there. So my son wanted to borrow it. So I said, there, just take it and go.
I got two very nice mountain bikes and I just bought. I don't know if I should talk about this.
Does your wife know?
Oh, of course not. Anyways.
A brand new car!
I just bought an electric motor kit for it.
Oh, jeez. Do you ride your bike? No. But I'm going to install this electric kit.
It's an electric assist. There will be, I did pay for the push button option so that there's a throttle control so you don't have to pedal at all. But it'd be great for hill climbs.
Wow.
Yeah, I bought the supersized battery.
Yeah. Next up, you're getting a Tesla, aren't you?
Nope.
Lies.
No.
Lies.
I was interested a few years back, but then of recent events, I've not going that way.
Alrighty. But I'll go electric bike all day long.
I've seen a few electric cars coming out of Quebec recently. I don't think I'm going to go electric car because I just range and stuff like that. Like
it's not there yet.
I drive up to Temagami and Killarney, and it's like that have to be an extra vehicle. And who has money for an extra vehicle?
Right.
So I need a gas vehicle to get up to, you know, way up to Killarney and so on. Right. I need to
Good time.
I
don't want to wait 6 hours somewhere halfway up the route.
Got to stop for a couple hours and charge.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Got a few things to talk about tonight. And I'm not going to talk about any of them.
Long pause. It's like
waiting.
Where's the segue or something?
Roostin Sports Limited.
Yeah.
Big maker of hockey sticks.
There you go.
Started way back in the day.
Yeah.
Like 170 years ago or something, they said. Well, 100 and something years ago.
They say that they've done 2 world wars, 2 pandemics, multiple market crashes.
Recessions
and so on. So they've been around for a while.
Since the 1800s.
Yeah.
They started making farm equipment and then went into whiskey barrels.
Did they say what town? They were first in Ayr, Ontario.
Yeah. And then they got into hockey sticks.
Mm. They've just announced manufacturer of hockey sticks.
They've just announced the acquisition of Grey Owl Paddles Limited of Cambridge, Canada's top producer of wooden paddles for the canoe, kayak, and dragon boat market. Full product line. You can see that at greyowlpaddles.com if you want to check those out. Founded in 1975 by avid canoeist Brian Dorfman, Grey Owl Paddles annually produces over 50,000 paddles. And I've been trying to make one for like a decade. They're doing 50,000 paddles with distribution throughout North America, Europe, Asia, Africa, and Australia. Grey Owl Paddles is a Canadian legacy brand. I am immensely proud to continue as a steward for that legacy, says W. Graham Roostin, executive chairman of Roostin Sports Limited. Brian's lifelong commitment to competitive and recreational canoeing and kayaking will continue to be honored as each magnificent Grey Owl product is created and sold.
It's nice to see that it's a Canadian company buying a Canadian company
and keeping staying in Canada. In this 50th anniversary year, I want to thank Roostin Sports for securing Grey Owl's future, says Brian Dorfman. The brand remains strong for future generations to enjoy. I didn't find out why. I think maybe he's just time to retire.
Yeah, he started it 50+ years ago, so he's been building paddles for a long time. And as we've seen with a few like sports stores and sports industries and canoe makers, it's, you know, when if there's a patriarch that doesn't have kids that want to carry on the business, then they invariably either close it down or sell it off.
So all Grey Owl Paddles custom machinery and manufacturing equipment have been relocated to Roostin Sports' 130,000 square foot mega factory in Brantford, Ontario, where Roostin currently manufactures over 300,000 hockey sticks annually.
Wow.
For its customer brands, as well as those for house brands Northland and Christian, which are available at sticks.com. Roostin Sports Limited will maintain and grow Grey Owl's established dealer network while adding a Shopify Power online outlet storefront to move existing non-dealer inventory at greyowlpaddles.com. Grey Owl Paddles Limited was first company to market innovative bent shaft paddles on a mass-produced scale at affordable prices, transforming the company from a 1970s cottage industry to an international paddle powerhouse. Over the next 5 decades, the company continued to expand its offerings. Grey Owl is also the world's biggest manufacturer of dragon boat paddles. I did not know
That's amazing. Yeah.
Grey Owl Paddles can be found at greyowlpaddles.com, and Graham Roostin's portfolio of owned companies can be viewed at roostin.com.
Very cool.
So he's got more. So he's, just, you know, collecting some companies and rather than see them go under. Yeah. And
so it seems that the Roostin Sports Limited is it's a group of a bunch of companies that they've acquired. Mm-hmm. Now they've acquired Grey Owl, but it's it seems to be something that is handed down through family generation to generation. So it's called Rooston Sports, and it's by the Rooston family. So it's going to be there. It seems like it's going to be Canadian for a long time. So it's nice to see that it's anchored here. And
for a company that started way back in the 1800s.
I know. That's impressive, eh?
And they've gone from everything to everything to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Starting from, like I say, farm equipment to whiskey barrels to hockey
Pretty
sticks.
Wild.
There, I think there was something else in there, too, that they did.
Yeah, I can't
remember. Between the whiskey barrels and the hockey sticks.
Yeah. I can't remember what he said.
Yeah. Anyway, so cool. Gray Owl Paddles will continue, so you'll still be able to buy your Gray Owl Paddles.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Canadian made product. Which is exciting for all our Canadian listeners.
Mm-hmm. The next one came across.
Oh, yes.
You can look at this from two ways. We always talk about, you know, these professional athletes trying to get to the Olympics and all that sort of stuff.
Amateur
athletes trying to get the Olympics and stuff, and how much it costs.
It costs
you're training
a lot.
And you still got to, you know, have a place to live and
all
that other
food
stuff.
Food on the table. You're probably going to have kids, or if you don't have kids, you have some sort of family or somebody you're supporting.
Or even if you're doing it by yourself.
Yeah.
It's expensive to live these days.
It is. And you can't afford to train at the level you need to train for the Olympics and have a full-time job.
Right.
They do not go hand in hand.
Right. So British canoeist Kurtz Adams Rosenthal's has been blocked from Olympic training due to his OnlyFans account.
Everybody goes, whoa.
Right?
A bunch of ears just perked up. What?
I can see, like I say, as you go through, I can see both sides of it.
Because
the minute
too.
You say OnlyFans,
it's like, whoa.
Everybody's thinking, oh, naked people everywhere.
Yeah.
Right? Back in April, the 22-year-old athlete's professional canoeing dreams were cut short when Paddle UK banned him from their world-class program, citing allegations related to his social media. The UK Sports Lottery-funded program aims to help athletes train for major sporting events such as the Olympics. While Paddle UK has refrained from sharing additional details about the allegations and subsequent investigation, the governing body has said that Rosenthal's ban is not disciplinary action, but a neutral act designed to protect all parties, safeguard other athletes, staff, and volunteers. In a separate interview with the aforementioned news outlet that was talking about this, the young athlete theorized that the group's decision stemmed from him having an OnlyFans account, which he created to help raise funds for his Olympic dreams. I've been posting videos on Instagram that are consciously made to be edgy in order to drive conversions to my spicy content page on OnlyFans. He says, since starting his OnlyFans in January, Rosenthal's has earned over £100,000.
That's just since January.
And hang on a second. How do I start Only...
Hey, Google.
Fans.
That's how I started OnlyFans account.
For context, athletes participating in Paddle UK's program are given $16,000 annual grant.
That's nothing.
An amount the young talent says is not enough to train full time. When you have to cover rent, travel, food, and most athletes who train full time are all living in London, they're very fortunate to have a parent backing. I wasn't, he says. I never had the ability to move to London because of financial struggles, so I was doing the travel from East Midlands, where I live, to London, back and forth, back and forth. Towards the end of the interview, he says he revealed that whether he would stop posting on OnlyFans if it meant keeping his spot on the program. This is the hardest decision I've ever faced in my life. I came to the realization about why I started doing this last winter after years of struggle, years of living on the edge, my mom working 90 hours a week, having bailiffs at the door. It's a tough decision. But unless something changes in the way athletes are paid, I don't see a way of working with Paddle UK.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough. It's a it to train, consistently train, takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. To train at a world-class level, you're putting in a lot of time to train.
Yeah.
And you can't eat crap food either. You have to eat well. You have to train well. And you can't do that and work a full-time job. And his mom was doing everything she could to keep food on the table and keep a roof over their heads. And
yeah. Well, I mean, even with my wife's background, their family was big into the figure skating community when they were growing up and stuff like that. And her mom was an announcer. Her sister's still a synchro coach.
Yeah.
Tracy was a judge. Okay. So she like Emmanuel Sandu and stuff, when they were coming up, she was judging.
Okay.
Right? So, and then you start seeing, because our daughter went into, because that was the dream, you got to get your daughter into the figure skating. She had no interest. But, you know, she went and did it. And you're looking at how much it's costing and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And this is just a kid. And then you start seeing the private lessons and you start getting a gauge about how much, if she decides to take off in this, how much this is going to cost. And you start thinking, holy crap.
Yeah.
That's like, now as he's saying, I mean, this is paddling. It's got to be along the same lines, though. The amount of money. If you're living by yourself, you're a young person, you're trying to work, trying to train, probably trying to get some education. How?
Yeah.
You can't do that on $16,000, which is what, $30,000?
Exactly. And for anything, like just for personal local knowledge, like it's, you know, I talk to people at work all the time about their kids are in hockey and it costs this much.
Oh, dude, don't even get me started on that.
And soccer, you wouldn't think it would cost a lot to play soccer, but it costs a lot to play soccer. And they have to have like at least two different colored uniforms that you have to pay for. And if you're going to, do you want to be in a league that, you know, competes regionally or provincially or whatever? And if you get good enough, you want to play internationally by that time you're under 17s or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it's expensive. And so I can't imagine the struggle to try and train for, you know, for training to compete at an Olympic class level.
That's a lot of hours a day.
That's a lot of hours a day. And plus a lot of travel because you're traveling internationally because you have to compete internationally to get the experience of competing against, you know, a worldwide group of people who are trying to train for whatever sport you're in, whether it's paddling or gymnastics or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's,
I mean, we did the hockey route with the rep hockey,
mm-hmm.
like Mackenzie was in that. And I mean, we're across the board into the States to tournaments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the amount of, I mean, my whole thing was we can keep you in hockey or I get a brand new truck. Like, I mean, that's how expensive it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could have had three trucks by now, you know, sort of deal.
So but, what was this guy's sport? What was it?
He
was
paddling.
But paddling what? Was it, did it ever say exactly what his specific competition was?
Paddling.
It covers a lot. Anyways, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, it does say.
Yeah.
Anyway, he says in a recent interview comes after he initially opened up about the situation. Says, I might lose my sports career with this post, but I couldn't stay silent for the last 15 plus years. My life has revolved around one thing, canoe slalom.
There we go.
Right?
Canoe slalom.
Yeah, I knew it said. Paddling. the sport I live and breathe, and it wasn't just me. My family sacrificed everything so I could keep chasing the ultimate dream at racing at the Olympics. After my mom sacrificed everything, working 100 plus hours a week, putting her needs to one side, I wanted to have a better life, not just for her, but also for me. I was sick of worrying about how to pay rent. I was sick of being on the verge of homelessness. I did whatever it took to never be in that position. Was it an unconventional? Sure, I'm not perfect. But to ban me from racing, to ban me from speaking to my teammates like I'm some criminal, that's effing insane. I'm blessed to have the platform now, but this isn't just about me anymore. I'm speaking up for every person who's been pushed aside for not fitting into someone's box. I'm speaking for everyone punished for not sucking up to the system.
There you go.
As of the writing, Paddle UK's investigation into the aforementioned allegations is ongoing and being conducted by an independent investigation service, Sport Integrity. So like I say, I can see it from both sides.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, oh, dude, your OnlyFans got that stigma. We don't want that stigma attached to our sport. But his side, well, I'm about to live on the streets.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to be homeless.
Yeah, give me more money so I don't have to do this.
Yeah.
Like, help out.
And it's unfortunate that, like, you see multi-million dollar contract. Now, we're talking, of course, professional sports. But, like, the money is poured into professional sports and multi-million dollar contracts. And so the money's there. You can see that the money's there. And what was it? Just in the last couple years, college football, they changed some of the rules about making money, because before you could get booted from a team if somebody gifted you a vehicle.
Yes, yes.
Like, you couldn't even receive gifts yes. that could be of monetary value. But the colleges and universities are making a lot of money for, yeah. you know, the 80,000 people whole, that come to watch you play.
Yeah, that was the whole big thing about, because they have a whole system. What was that one about, the family adopts the guy
yeah.
on the street.
Yeah.
He ends up playing for, I think, the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah.
Blindside.
Yeah, Blindside.
And you start looking at that. There's, like, team supporters, and you do everything to get. And that was one of the things, is they were saying, were you coerced into going to that university?
Because
the parents are big supporters of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all that sort of. There's a whole political mm-hmm. thing that goes on with those.
Way too much.
And the recruiters go, and yeah, they can't give gifts and stuff.
If you play for my team, we'll give you a car,
right?
Or we'll give your parents a car.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a whole whole basketball
it's,
too, right?
It's all about integrity of the sport and at the college level, right? So I do get it. I do understand where you don't want that stigma and that smear of your sport, your college, mm-hmm. your university, your players. But it's also unfair because the colleges are making a lot of money. When you have 80 to 100,000, these football college teams, they have huge stadiums.
Oh yeah,
huge.
Michigan. Have you ever been to a Michigan game?
It's.
Good
I've never.
Lord.
I've never been, but
good Lord.
I've seen video and photos. It's like it's a huge stadium.
Yeah.
So they're making the money hand over fist, but the kids are not allowed to have any of it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a shame. And so, like I say, I mean, I can see the part of it where they don't want, you know, because if one guy does it and they don't say anything.
Hmm.
Then all of a sudden you're going to have naked people, naked paddlers everywhere.
And they're very fit and healthy people, boys and girls there. Like
Yeah. But on the other hand, there's got to be some middle ground.
Exactly.
Right.
There's got to be some way to find funding or donations to support more programs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, the Olympics are coming up in Australia. And so they are doing a lot of design and engineering and planning and pouring a lot of money into sports programs to increase participation across the board to get a better product. You're trying to get, if you have enough kids getting out to play a sports, any sport, whether it's paddling or whatever. So if you have people that didn't have the opportunity and could have been an Olympian, well, if you spend the money, that person might get included and might excel.
And win your country a gold
medal. Exactly. So they're pouring the money in because the Olympics are coming in Australia. But this is something that all countries could do. And for when it comes to like Canada, U.S. and whatever, if like I know Canada is not very great at supporting their junior sports and stuff, but we are getting better in some cases. You're mm-hmm. seeing a lot more Canadian ball players hitting the fields and so on. But
I think things are slowly starting to turn around too.
It is.
Because even with women's sports.
So with women's soccer, they've started a new league. That's going to make a big difference.
Well, that and the pay rates when it comes to these competitions.
Yes.
They're starting to make them more equivalent to the men's pay
the
rates,
winnings,
right?
The winnings. Yeah. So if you have a guy that could win $50,000 for a top spot, and then it's like, well, there's $4,500 for the women. It's like, whoa.
Yeah. Yep.
Whoa. Hang on.
Yeah. Anyway, so we'll keep an eye on that, see what happens there. But I have a feeling when it comes to sport integrity, something mm-hmm. like OnlyFans has that stigma that. Yeah. 100 grand since January, though. Good Lord.
Like, I get, and so I made the comparison, but I'm talking at the Olympic level when there's a country will pay their Olympian so much for gold, silver, bronze.
Yes.
But when it comes to professional sports, at that level, and if it's a professional sport, it's not by donation, it's not by that ground level support. It depends on what the sport brings in. Because the NBA, for example, I watch a lot of Caitlin Clark, a lot of reels on her. So they make $75,000 a year. Whereas in the NBA, for the male side, they're making a lot of money.
Such and such just got $100,000 or $1 million contract.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm not going to get into it now, but
no.
Someone talked about these big contracts. And they say, well,
they're bringing taxes in the viewership.
No, there's so when you say somebody's getting $10 million a year, minus taxes, there's all these different things that come off of the fees and things they got to pay. So their $10 million becomes $5 million pretty quick.
Yeah.
So there's a whole thing about that. You look into that. I'm not going to go into all of that now. But anyway, that's just found that kind of interesting. Like, dude's got an OnlyFans. Well, you can't paddle for us.
Yeah.
So which do you stick with?
Yeah, well,
it's going to be a hard decision, he says.
In 6 months, he's made 100,000 pounds. What would that be Canadian?
200 grand.
Is that that much?
Yeah, it's double.
Yeah?
Yeah, pretty much double.
Hmm.
Yeah. have you ever been on a canoe trip and somebody sparks up? A little bit of the wacky tobacco, the Mary Jane.
I've seen it. It's very rare. It's just because of the group of people that I hang out with. It's very rare for me to see
bunch
it.
Of squares. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's just
a bunch of biddies.
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah?
When I have seen it, it's usually at night around the campsite.
Party poopers. Okay. Yeah, well, that's when you usually do it, right?
Yeah.
So, and now, I mean, of course, in Canada, weed is free.
Yeah.
Well, not free, but you're allowed to do it.
Yeah.
No one worries about the 420 or the popo anymore. Yeah.
And we've talked about this kind of thing a lot. It's like, well, there's a time and a place.
Yes.
Time and place.
On the 401 and rush hour traffic is not the time, not the place.
Exactly. Well, I think what fascinates me is you cannot walk down the street with a can of beer in your hand, but you can walk down the street smoking marijuana.
Right.
And it's like, well, wait a sec. You know what I mean? It's, where's my privilege to carry a can of beer?
Yeah. I feel like I am being oppressed.
Yeah, I know. But I do agree it shouldn't be done, and which is the gist of our whole conversation here.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be doing during the day when your safety and health can be at risk.
Mm-hmm. Or too much.
Or too much, sure. Mm-hmm. Even if it's in the evening.
Right.
Too much.
Hiking mountains on psychedelic mushrooms can be a bad idea.
Yep.
May 24th, 9 a.m. 911 dispatchers in New York receive a strange call from two hikers who were on Cascade Mountain in the Adirondacks. Hikers reported that their friend had died on the mountain and they needed help.
Sounds serious.
But not all was as it was seemed. When the hikers later encountered the Cascade Mountain Summit steward, a trained educator who was on a routine patrol, they told him they were lost. According to a press release from New York Department of Environmental Conservation, DEC, the summit steward quickly realized that the hikers were in an altered mental state from ingesting psychedelic mushrooms. Let's go climb a big mountain. But before we go!
Seems so unwise, eh?
Hey, what can you say? The plot thickened when the third member of their party called. This is the dead guy. While they were still engaging with the steward. It turned out that they weren't dead after all. Which just totally ruined it for me. I'm waiting for that call from the other side. But had gotten separated from the other two. The steward contacted forest rangers who dispatched someone to come assist. A DEC forest ranger responded, escorted the two hallucinating hikers down the mountain to a waiting ambulance and police unit. The ranger then brought the lost third hiker back to the group's campsite. No one was reported injured. DEC says none of the hikers are facing criminal charges.
Well, that's good.
Mm-hmm. Lucky, I would say.
They're very lucky.
Cascade Mountain is among the 46 high peaks in the Adirondacks. Have you been on Cascade?
No.
With an elevation of nearly 4,100 feet, it is one of the more popular mountains for hikers. Forest rangers respond to more than 300 search and rescue calls throughout the state every year, mostly in the high peaks and Catskills. They encourage hikers to be prepared before heading out. The hikers on Cascade Mountain this month were lucky that their situation wasn't worse and that their friend was located alive. Other incidents haven't ended so fortuitously. 2022, a woman hiking with a friend in Gold Bar, Washington, had taken psychedelic mushrooms. Two got separated and when one of them returned, she reported her friend as missing. Missing woman's body was discovered in the river the following day. 2018, two snowshoers on Mount Seymour in North Vancouver took both ecstasy and cannabis.
Hey, let's mix things.
And ended up in a violent knife fight.
What?
One of them reportedly had a psychotic break and attacked his companion. The two stabbed each other with Bowie knives, nearly killing one another. Both men were arrested when rescuers responded to the 911 calls. How was your weekend? Well, let me tell you. If you ever go hiking with Bob.
Do not do ecstasy and cannabis at the same time.
Frisk them for knives first. Psychedelic substances aren't the only culprit either. Alcohol can similarly get people into trouble when out in the wilderness. 2006, two men who'd left a nearby bar in Vancouver ended up hiking down a trail in Burnaby Mountain and lost their way. They were discovered deceased at the bottom of a 200-foot ravine a day later.
Why would you leave in the middle of the night a bar and go hiking? Well, obviously,
just warning her. Somebody said, hold my beer, watch this. And then they just never came back.
That's unfortunate.
But in the middle of the night.
I know.
What? Speaking about the 2022 death in Gold Bar, Dr. Nathan Sackett, a medical researcher at the University of Washington, said that it isn't necessarily these substances that are inherently dangerous. It's the environment in which they are taken. Particularly when it comes to psychedelics, accidents are prone to happen, he says. As psychedelics become culturally more normative, it's really important that people know how they should do them in a controlled environment. Hopefully one day people won't have to hide in the woods to experience them.
Wow.
I'm getting me some drugs and going to the mountains.
Yeah, I know. It seems so, I don't know.
Weird.
It's
the knife fight one that got me. I mean, the dude calling from the other side.
Yes. Our friend's dead.
Our friend's dead.
No, we're not. Ring.
That's like that. They were searching for that guy. Was it over in Russia or Poland or something? They're searching for somebody who was lost.
Join the search party.
It
took them a couple hours to realize, they're looking for me.
They're calling my name.
Hey, the guy that's missing, it has my own name.
Right?
That's pretty. What a coincidence.
What a quinkening. Anyway, when you're calling in, and this is exactly, when you're taking psychedelics and you're calling in, and you've got to start sending in other rangers and stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, at that time. So
charges or not?
So the problem is when you, it depends on the consequences, right? So when rescue teams have to go in and rescue somebody, they're putting their lives at risk, mm-hmm. whether it's by helicopter, by hiking, by whatever means you get the rescue team into the backcountry, if they have to rappel into somewheres or whatever, people are risking their lives to save your life. And so I think these three that managed to get out from Cascade Mountain, they did come out under their own power. It was a low consequence. There was no real rescue got started. The call was made, and then they were found the warden or whatever they called him. So that's low consequence. I can see why they didn't get charged. But generally, when you see that there's a full-on rescue put in place and somebody was negligent, mm-hmm. I can see why they would charge financially or criminally in that case.
That's why I'm wondering. They weren't charged, criminal charge, but it doesn't say if they got a fine.
Yeah, they didn't say anything about fines.
Yeah.
So
if they were hopped up on drugs and they're all, you know, in a state because their friend is dead.
Yeah.
And then their phone rings with call display.
How much more freaked out are you going to be?
Right?
There's a dead guy calling me.
There's a dead guy. Bob, where are you? Are you in heaven?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a time and place for stuff like that. And if you're on the move, something like that.
Yep.
Not a good time.
No, exactly. Like, why risk it? It's the, I don't know. Like, maybe sitting around the fire, I might have a couple drinks, but I'm not going to do it during the day. It's like there's a time and a place for that kind of thing, right? It's, you're risking too much, and you're risking the lives of the people that are with you.
Yep.
So, keep it around the campfire. Keep it in camp. Don't do it during the day. Can you imagine?
And don't get in a knife fight over it.
That's so far over the top.
Right? Don't do so much. Don't mix your drugs.
I know.
Don't mix your alcohol either.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, one thing leads to another.
Yeah.
The knives come out.
Yeah. Things go too far.
Then the weekend's ruined.
Yeah.
There's no coming back from that one.
Yeah. Sean just fell off a cliff portaging.
A third time. Let's get on to something a bit more heartwarming.
Okay.
You know what? I mean, that drug thing is serious, but you can't help but giggle.
Yeah, it's kind of both. Really, it's one of those dark humor things. It's so ridiculous that you got to laugh at it, even though the consequences are dire and people have lost their lives. But still, it's like, I don't know. You kind of bring it on yourself if you're doing something stupid. It's like one of those Darwin things.
Darwin Awards, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a TV show in the UK called The Repair Shop. I've seen some videos on this. And there's all heartwarming thingies and stuff like that. People bring them family heirlooms, old items that need fixing, and the experts restore them. So they I guess, get these people information and find out somebody needs something fixed and old time stuff or whatever.
It's antiques. A free fix, and it's part of the show. The show pays for it. And
A man with dwarfism told the repair shop experts they'd given him freedom after they restored a rare canoe he could use to sail Scotland's waterways with his daughter. The BBC show went on the road with carpenter Will Kirk and horologist Stephen Fletcher, traveling to Ayrshire in Scotland's west coast. They met Tom, who has achondroplasia, the most common form of disproportionate short stature, who brought an unusual canoe online. He bought this thing online. He told the experts he was hoping he could make it seaworthy so that he could take his daughter, who also has the disorder, out on the water. "I want to show my daughter, just because we are small, don't give up, you can do anything," he says. When the repair shop stars met Tom, he explained that the canoe, which was designed in the 1930s, had been constructed in three pieces for easy transport by train. Specific canoe design based on MacGregor's Rob Roy was created by John Marshall, a Scottish boat builder in the 1930s. The modular design with three sections held together by wire was ideal for transport and assembly by the water's edge. It has been used by a pair of adventurers, but ended up in storage for decades, leaving it a bit battered. Tom bought it for £50, $100. But he knew it needed specialists to fix it. He says it was beyond my scope to restore it. Describing what it would mean to him to see it restored, he said, "Hopefully we will be able to explore out on the waterways of Scotland and England and everything else with my daughter. It would allow us to do things under normal circumstances we wouldn't be able to do." And as it was in three parts, Tom could would be able to construct the vessel by the water's edge before going canoeing. Obviously, a big canoe lifting it up on a vehicle's roof racks is impossible for me and likewise for my daughter. And the canoe gives us both the possibility of canoeing around the waterways. He said his height had never been an issue, that he enjoyed football, cricket, golf, and skiing. That's the way I want to show my daughter, just because we're small, don't give up, you can do anything. Fletcher went to Scottish boat building school to seek the help of boat builder Connor Campbell with the tricky repair. They got to work mending the boat, removing the canvas, dealing with some rot, replacing damaged beams with new ones. A floor frame was also needed to be replaced. Tom admitted that he was shaken when he returned to see the canoe, saying it was seaworthy, it would mean everything. He couldn't believe it when he saw the transformation, gasping, "Wow, that's unbelievable." He went on, "It's a million times better than I thought it was going to be." As they were right by the water, Tom decided to give the test sail straight away. It was freedom, he said out for the first time. Just paddling me, oars, the fantastic canoe, it was a joy. A little bit windy, but a joy. I get used to that, Tom. It's always windy when you're paddling. I can't wait to take my daughter out in it. She is super excited. I'm super excited. She has all the gear, and we can just paddle off into the sunrise. So that's a good little story there. You saw the boat, eh?
I did.
Mm-hmm.
And on YouTube, full episodes of The Repair Shop is there for all the seasons. I'm trying to find the specific season and show where they fixed
it. It was just in May.
Was it just in May?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a recent episode. How about Repair Shop Canoe?
BBC Repair Shop Canoe.
And the YouTube video should be there.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it's a bit of a, it looks like a canoe, but it covered. Looks like a kayak with a big rectangle in the middle.
Exactly.
Right?
So it looks like...
you could put a sail in it.
What's the Verlin Kruger? So it looks like a Verlin Kruger sort of, but in three pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could take it apart and... pretty neat when you can do that. They got other boats nowadays that do the same thing. You can take them to pieces and you can fold them up. You can collapse them down. Makes things so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
To store
and it makes travel. It easier for them specifically,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, if you're able to lift the hatch and throw three pieces in the back of your car,
yeah.
When you definitely can't put it on top of the car,
exactly. Yeah.
So this gives you something else. It's all about accessibility and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. And this gives them that to get out there and do some paddling. Yeah. Excellent. So that was a pretty good little story. I saw that one. Now the next one has been making the news around here the last few days.
Yes.
It's nice that people are getting out on the water, and it's nice that people have inflatable canoes that they can get out on the water. I think the purpose of the inflatable is so that you can put it in the back of your car and then go to the water, inflate it.
Yep. Well, that's the design, the intent of an inflatable canoe or kayak.
A driver in Caledon, which is just west of Toronto, is facing charges after officers discovered an inflatable canoe tied to the front of his windshield of their vehicle. According to the Caledon Detachment of the Ontario Provincial Police, the traffic stop occurred when an officer noticed the car being driven with its view significantly obstructed. Now, have you seen the picture of this?
I saw the picture. So, like, even with any canoe or whatever you put on your roof, like, so he chose to have this half-deflated inflatable canoe over the windshield, tied down, strapped down, but it was right over the driver's side of the window, not in the middle, not on the passenger side.
The inflatable canoe was strapped in such a way that it appeared to impair the driver's ability to see through the front windshield. The driver was charged under the Highway Traffic Act with no clear view to front. But if you look at the picture, you can see the steering wheel. You can see a few inches in to the car.
The guy would have to look around or under.
He would have to be like looking through his steering wheel. Yeah. It was that close and hanging over the edge.
Reminded me of people who don't clear the snow off their windshields in the winter.
Yeah. Police looked to social media to share the incident, took to social media to share the incident, warning motorists to pay... properly secure loads and ensure their view is not blocked.
Oh, and I like the next line.
Don't have your fun times deflated by getting a ticket. That was somebody's dad.
Yeah, dad joke.
The OPP posted reminding drivers to travel safely. Town of Caledon and police services continue to emphasize road safety as the summer season begins. And that's tying stuff down properly, giving yourself view. Well, there is another article that continued on with this stuff, but they're showing a transport truck, the driver's side window, all covered in duct tape, and the mirror gone. And dude's driving from Northern Ontario.
So leaning way over to the right to see around the duct tape.
Well, he couldn't. No. His windshield was good, but the driver's side door.
Oh,
he couldn't see out the side.
Oh, so.
And there was no mirror there.
So no shoulder checks, no nothing.
Nothing. He would just pull over.
Good luck, everybody. I'm changing lanes now. Yep.
There was a couple other people that had garbage bags and all that stuff for windows and.
when transporting canoes. Like just the rope or tie down in front of my vision.
That bothers you.
It bugs me a lot. Yeah. Well, when we did that five lakes in 24 hours, it was like, it was bothering my brain. I was like, it was exhausting me because I was when I was getting, the more tired I got, the more the 24 hours got on, the more I wasn't able to ignore the tie down in front of my vision.
Yeah, and that's just a tie down. But you know why I tie the boat like that?
I tie mine like that too.
I just do it to piss you off.
No, but I tie mine like that too. But it's just over a long period of time, it really started to exhaust me. So I usually try to tie mine in a way where the V is lower or further forward or something, just to get it further away from my vision or off to the side.
Yeah. Yeah, not always possible, but hey, you do what you can. As long as it's tied down properly, front, back, belly.
Yeah, front, back, belly, because accelerating or the wind pressure, you don't want flying off and killing somebody behind you. If you rear end somebody, you don't want to fly off in front of you and impale somebody in front of you. And just the belly straps are just holds it from flopping side to side.
And if one of your straps gives way, like your front strap,
others that are holding.
There's something. Yeah. So. You sent me something here about northern projects happening.
Ah, yes.
Ontario government working in partnership with Taqua Tagamu Nation and Moose Cree First Nations in the Timmins area to expand hydroelectric generation to meet growing energy demand and support greater economic self-determination and prosperity in regional economic growth. A lot of big words here.
Yes. So we've heard a few things from people over the while, and it seemed controversial at the time, but it's starting to become more open and a lot more people are talking about it. So we're not here to talk about the controversial side of it. We're just going to lay out the facts.
Mm-hmm. Leading a co-planning, working alongside the government and Ontario Power Generation to explore and advance opportunities for two new hydroelectric generation stations. If approved, these sites could produce up to 430 megawatts. Two proposed stations, Nine Mile Rapids and Grand Rapids, could generate a combined 430 megawatts of electricity, enough to power about 430,000 homes. This work represents the first new hydroelectric stations in Ontario in 10 years, with Northern Ontario's growing demand for electricity. IESO forecasting an 81% increase by 2050. That's a lot of new development up there. The coal planning process is one that puts First Nations in the driver's seats from the beginning and helps to define economic reconciliation by including the First Nations in shaping the project for the benefit of First Nation communities while supporting the province's work to meet rising demand for electricity. The approach reflects the province's broader energy and reconciliation strategy. Now, how does this affect us? Well, it'll be another dam on the Mattagami River and another one on the Abitibi. Both locations are before where the Moose River starts on the way to Moosonee. So there's people that go up those rivers to get up to Moosonee every year and then take the Polar Bear Express back.
Yeah.
So this will just be another dam that they've got to go around. or another two dams?
Well, there's a lot of projects on Ontario and Ontario Power Generation. They do have a lot of hydroelectric projects all across the province.
Yep.
And they are moving, you see it in the news, they're moving towards more work with some of the local Native
First Nations
and to work with them and have the First Nations have ownership in the projects. So you're seeing a lot more lately, and you only really find out about it when things happen or whatever. Like recently on the Ontario-Manitoba border, there's a few of these hydro projects that had to be shut down because of forest fires. And these are dammed rivers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And on these two specific rivers that we were just talking about, the Abitibi and the Matagami, both flow into the Moose. So there's already, what is it, half a dozen hydro projects on them already, you know, 172 megawatts, 205 megawatts, whatever. So these are going to be two additionals on the same river. So they all flow into each other and all create power. But some of these newer ones are going to be further north and closer to like Moose Knee Moose Factory that the it's feasible that they'll be able to run. A lot of these northern communities survive on diesel generation of electricity. And so to get power fed into them from a local source, because you can't run power lines that far north is unreasonable, which is why they do have diesel generated power in all these northern communities. So there's going to be a few more extra portages on the route. And I'm planning a trip myself, either this fall or next fall, to get up to Moose Knee Moose Factory. And we, the group of us, are looking at the Abitibi River dropping in at Otter Falls or below Otter Falls and making the way through. So we were planning on getting dropped in after the last hydroelectric. So there's another one, but it's off to the side of a water flow goes into the Abitibi. So you don't have to portage over that. I can't remember. It's named after a TV personality. I can't remember. Anyways, that one you don't have to portage over. But these will end up being, it'll be for a few paddlers each year that do go down these rivers. There's not a lot, but it's enough. And it just means an extra portage, in my mm-hmm. opinion. So a lot of people don't like it. A lot of people don't like all the extra damming of rivers and hydro projects. But, you know, we do need the power, right? It's yep. one of the facts. Do you like your TV? Do you like your streetlights? Like
nope. Get rid of them all.
Yeah. So anyways, it's one of those things, like the environmentalists don't like it and the paddlers don't care about it. And the people who like electricity are like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
lots of point of views.
It is a balance.
All depends on your perspective, right?
Yeah, exactly. And what I like about it is that they are working with First Nations. First Nations are taking partial ownership.
Mm-hmm.
So they are becoming part owners of these hydroelectric projects. And so it'll be money going into these northern communities and people working at these locations from northern communities. So there's are a few losses, but there's a lot of wins.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. We'll keep an eye on that, see what happens. But yeah, it doesn't say when they're looking at doing it though, right?
These projects from what I saw are breaking ground within the next year or two. Ooh, and so okay. They're at the announcement phase, right? So
yeah.
they like, what is it? Otter Rapids. It's one of the big ones. That's a huge project right now. They're expanding it. So there's a lot of work going on in these projects up north.
Cool. Maybe it'll be something you've got to portage around when you go.
Ah, yeah.
Better you than me. We talk a lot about the Canadian Canoe Museum. Why? Because it's close to us.
And it's cool.
1634, when Jean Nicolet stepped ashore near Green Bay, Wisconsin, he was considered the first of many French explorers, traders, and missionaries to explore the state. Some, like Brulé, Radisson, Marquette, Perrault, Cadeau, all left their names on Wisconsin towns, rivers, and institutions. Like Nicolette, they all traversed the Great Lakes and explored the region in birch bark canoes. Canoe was the main mode of transport in the Northwoods for almost three centuries, and its mark on history has continued to this day. And it is only fitting that when a generous donor approached a group of Spooner area canoe enthusiasts with a gift of 25 vintage canoes, they banded together to restore the decrepit granary to house the historic, new-to-them boats. 2010, 376 years after Nicolette's arrival in the Midwest, the Wisconsin Canoe Heritage Museum opened in Spooner, heart of Wisconsin's best canoe country. Today, the museum traces the history of canoes, including its unique shape, materials, and construction methods, as well as the transformation from beast of burden to recreational craft. So it's like the Wisconsin version of the Canadian Canoe Museum.
Yeah. Yep.
Beyond its historical exhibits, the Wisconsin Canoe Heritage Museum showcases contemporary craftsmanship, displaying boats built by notable modern artisans alongside its diverse collection of historic vessels. To that end, the museum's newest exhibit, which opened on May 24th, which also happens to be Wisconsin Canoe Heritage Day, was not aware of that, will celebrate iconic Wisconsin canoe builders, this new exhibit. Space also features a 2,500 square foot canoe workshop where the museum offers hands-on demonstrations and maker workshops related to canoeing. Museum members can rent the space to work on personal projects alongside local experts as well, which have previously included paddle building, canvassing, restoration, and even snowshoe building, according to the museum's website. So if you wanted to build a cedar strip canoe, you could rent out space.
I wonder what it would cost to do that.
I don't know.
It's too far for me to use.
Yeah.
But
I mean, if you got people there that know how to do stuff, yeah,
you
as
could,
well.
You have you could resources ask, to draw on.
Yeah. Newly appointed museum director Alexis Linder said, "What sets this museum apart is the commitment of local volunteers. The museum's members and volunteers are some of the most dedicated people I've ever met," she says. More than just a museum, the Wisconsin Canoe Heritage Museum fosters a canoe-loving community where all are welcome to paddle on in and join the fun. Wisconsin Canoe Heritage Museum is located in Spooner, Wisconsin. You can go to wisconsincanoeheritagemuseum.org.
That's a long name.
Right?
You can just Google the different words.
Wisconsin Canoe Heritage Museum. You can keep up with the museum and learn about future events on its Facebook page, WIS Canoe Museum.
Hmm. Very cool.
So, yeah, it sounds just like the Canadian Canoe Museum, except down in Wisconsin.
Yes, and they have a new exhibit open that just a month ago.
Yeah.
Less than a month
no,
ago.
No, like
a couple
this
weeks
week.
Ago.
Yeah. Yeah, last week.
Week and a half ago.
Yeah. So, go check it out. If you're in Wisconsin, and if you're not, drive there. Check it out. Wisconsin Canoe Heritage Museum.
Their workshop is 2,500 square feet. That's huge.
So you could build more canoes than just one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a whole bunch of paddles. A whole bunch of paddles.
So 2,500 square feet, you could probably build simultaneously like, what, five or six canoes? Five? Something like that.
Depends if you want to build a Voyageur canoe or not.
Yeah. Depends on how big the canoe is.
There you go.
Wow.
Books. Something you don't know much about.
No.
I've been reading a few books lately. The Wilderness Sings by Sigurd Olsen. I just finished. Kevin Callan read something I had written and suggested I read some of his Olsen stuff as it sounded similar to what I wrote. It was a great suggestion. I really enjoyed that book. Crooked Old River by Trapper Haskins. I met Trapper at the Quiet Out Adventure Symposium this year. I recorded an episode with him as well about his book and the trip he took. Check out episode 474 for the interview with Trapper. I've just got into that one, so I'm enjoying that. And I'm listening to the audio book when I'm driving. Walden.
Ah, yes.
By Thoreau. I read it in high school, but I didn't really... I was too dumb to appreciate it back mm-hmm. then. So I figured, you know what? I'll... Got Audible credits. I'll use one. And I got Don Quixote.
Mm-hmm. How'd that
and
go?
That's like 52 hours long.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm giving that one a break. I'm about 18 hours into it. And you got to remember, I'm driving like 40 minutes into work, 40 minutes back.
Yeah.
40 minutes into work. So this is taking a while. So yeah, I'm taking a break from that. And I've started to listen to Walden. By Thoreau. I did a little posting there on our Facebook and stuff. And a few people have given me titles of other books to read. The Lonely Land by Sigurd Olsen. The Maine Woods by Thoreau. Desert Solitaire by Edward Abbey. And I might read that one because Abbey was my grandparents' last name. My mom's maiden
name. You'll read it because of the name?
Yep. Yep. Great Solitude by Robert Perkins. A Dangerous River by R.M. Patterson.
Oh, that sounds familiar. I recognize
yeah.
that name.
I think I will give this more of the Sigurd Olsen books for sure. Because, yeah, I started listening to it, and I'm thinking, that does sound like how I write. So, yeah, I'll keep reading, listening to some of his stuff.
So... No, I was going to ask a question, and the way you said that kind of confused me because I don't recognize you as a writer, but I guess you've been putting a few things on the website.
Oh, no, I've got, yeah. I'm about 3/4 away through a novel.
Writing your own novel?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Right on.
I've been doing that for a few years now, so I asked, I showed something to Kevin there.
Oh, and that's how and he, then,
yeah.
Hey,
I said, what do you think of this? And he goes, have you ever read Sigurd Olsen? Sounds a lot like that.
Hmm.
So, yeah. Who cool. knows?
Right on.
Maybe I'm just him reincarnated. No, because he died after I was born. So that really doesn't work that way, does it? Yeah.
Yeah, you never know.
Well, maybe I was reincarnated and then went back in time. time is only a human construct.
Yes.
If our listeners have any books to add to this list, drop us a comment on our socials or send an email. Our contact info on our webpage, paddlingadventuresradio.com. Yeah, if you got any other books that might be interesting to read, any picture books, just let us know for Derek.
Yep, there you go.
He's, you know, do they have, what are the graphic novels for canoers? A canoe trip. Deliverance graphic novel. Yeah.
Walking Dead graphic novel.
Yeah, yeah. But with canoeing.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, if there's any other books that you would suggest... that might be good ones to read. Drop us a line. Let us know what you what books they are. I mean, I do have a massive bookshelf filled with stuff. Too much stuff. Last thing I got here. Hurricane Helene. A little bit of an update. While Hartford rafting businesses worried Hurricane Helene flood damage would wipe out their entire tourism season, and the last time we did an update, they were debating whether they were going to be able to get things ready on time because there was so much stuff still.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Every time they turned around, there was more to do.
And you have to relearn a river.
Yeah.
You have to relearn because you can't just go down blind as a rafting guide or a canoe guide or a kayak guide. You have to know the river so that you can your customers can be safe.
Well, you could go down blind and just might add to it. But
have fun, yeah, guys.
Yeah, probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
They figured it would wipe out their entire tourism season, but most were ready to welcome back visitors to the Pigeon River at the start of the season. Albeit with rocks shifted, channels widened, and the river flowing past ongoing interstate repairs.
Oh, yes. Construction.
Mm-hmm.
New bridges.
Water is a powerful force, and rivers are constantly changing, says Olwen Claiborne, marketing director for Smoky Mountain Outdoors Rafting. What we're seeing is the massive quantities of stone that were moved around and the carving out of new channels, but the rapids are still there, and in some cases, I think they're splashier and more fun.
Splashier.
Splashier. Smoky Mountain Outdoors, along with other rafting businesses like Nantahala, outdoor center, Pigeon Outpost, is based in the tourist-driven rafting community of Hartford. When Helene's floodwaters pushed through East Tennessee in September, businesses were left in ruins and the river forever changed. Waters are now safe to raft on with a temporary launch site, but a few businesses remain closed for the season as roads in the area are repaired. That includes Obermountain's rafting location along the Rip Roaring Adventures and Rafting in the Smokies. There are places that still have not recovered enough, and they want to see more progress, Claiborne says. Business owners weren't sure whether reopening would ever be possible, but the community came together with help shovel mud from the buildings, rebuild and advocate for Hartford in front of elected representatives in Nashville and Cook County. The rafting businesses collaborate and meet as the Pigeon River Outfitters Association, an instrumental force in pushing for more government help after Helene. We are a better place now mentally than we've been in some time. Several months now.
It'd be devastating to have all that destruction, right?
Yeah.
Of facilities, of rivers,
everything,
of
yeah.
bridges, and yeah. like people can't even drive to your facility to rent your gear. So it's
well, that's a few of them. That's what they're saying. Is
yeah,
they can't get in.
People, yeah, yeah, people can't get to you. So mentally, that would be so. It would be so crushing to have. Like, this storm had serious consequences,
mm-hmm.
and not just to industries and to rafting companies. Like, a lot of people lost their homes, right?
Yeah.
So it's it was a big storm. It was a mess.
Interstate construction is one of the main concerns as the business tour bus tourists upstream where they place the rafts in the water. Without the interstate, the businesses can't operate.
There you go.
Tennessee and North Carolina Departments of Transportation have installed a temporary drop-in area for rafts in the meantime. It's smaller than what the businesses normally use, but it's what will allow them to operate in the meantime before they return to the original location next season. I mean, you got to meet halfway, right? We can give you a place to launch. It's not going to be what you're used to, but it'll get you going.
Yeah.
Right? One of the few bright sides of the flooding is how the rushing waters washed away muck. The county helped clear leftover debris in the water. We're pretty spotless from the put-in all the way to the takeout and even beyond into Newport. So that was a big win that we were able to get a lot of the debris removed very quickly before the season opens.
Yeah, all that, all the muds and stuff that settle into a river on the banks and whatever, all that would have been washed away. Like, a lot of stuff moved, but the muck was cleared out, and plus the physical work of shoveling muck out of buildings mm-hmm. and shoveling muck out of driveways, and it was a lot. So the river took care of some of it, but then it left a bunch. I remember seeing videos of you could see a man standing on what looked like a very rocky beach, and he panned the camera around. You could see he was standing on a new beach that was like 10 feet above a highway. The
yeah.
highway was buried by all this like river gravel and river rock. It's like, oh, that's not going to, you can't move that with a shovel. You're going to need heavy equipment to come in there and clear that out.
Yep.
So, whew.
Yeah, you know what? They're all coming together down there and getting stuff going. Because you got to think, there is a lot of local people rely on the businesses as well, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like people that work there. And then, as we discussed before last week with some things, is how much money the tourists bring in.
Because mm-hmm.
you're stopping for gas, you're stopping for coffee, you're stopping for lunch at local places.
Yeah.
And so if you can't have those people coming in.
Yeah.
Then not only does the rafting business lose the money, but
the locals do.
The locals.
Yeah.
So it's very dependent on that sort of thing. So it's nice to see that they all came together and
not everybody,
working things out.
Not everybody has the physique of an Olympian to start an OnlyFans page to help pay for the offset of a lost tour season.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't look at me, buddy. I think I might open an OnlyFeet account. Hey, check these babies out. Oh, these feet could talk. The miles they've walked. The stories they could tell.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. You got anything else?
I do. So in talking about preparing for the season and these guys cleaning up the mess, I noticed I've been seeing in the last couple days, so if it's popping up on Instagram, it must be ongoing right now, but there's sections of the Trent Severn that have been completely drained. So,
Haley Falls, I saw was one.
Yeah, that was one. So they're obviously doing some maintenance work, and they've allowed it to drain. I think most sections of the Trent Severn do have bypasses, so you don't, because there's flow, natural flow. You want to keep the water there, just like the Panama Canal. You can't keep draining the upper lakes, right? So they've drained these large sections of the Trent Severn, I assume for maintenance, but it looks really weird to see... no water in a canal.
I was at the Welland Canal. It must be 5 or 6 years ago now. We were driving down by the Welland Canal, and they had drained one of the locks we were going by.
Okay.
So, like, you're used to seeing these massive ships, and you're looking down, and you're like,
oh,
wow,
that's a big hole.
Right?
That's really deep.
Hey, look at those bodies.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the first thing I thought when I saw the pictures, like, oh, I wonder if they'd let me in there with a metal detector.
Right? The amount of stuff that must be buried in there.
Yeah. Lost fishing rods and
wallets and rings and
cell phones and
you know. Yeah, right? That'd be awesome. Fishing lures.
Yeah. And,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, anyway. So it must be doing some sort of work on them, to a little bit of maintenance or whatever. And
yeah, it was just surreal to see it. It's like, ooh, that looks so different without water in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. excuse me. Is that everything?
That is all.
Nothing else?
That is it.
When are you going paddling next?
I have no direct plans. I lost out on the May trip because the boys had to go early. So instead of a group of five, it was a group of two.
Mm-hmm.
Because three of us, it was like, what, you want to go this weekend? What are you talking about? But work schedules changed, and the main organizer of the trip had to move his time. So I missed out on that trip. But we are, as a family, we're going in July, definitely. We're going to be doing East Coast. We're going to rent some kayaks and stuff. The kids are old enough now. But yeah, I have no direct plans currently for any camping trips.
Uh-huh. What about getting out for day paddle?
I'd like to do that. I'm trying to make arrangements with some people at work to go do some kayaking and in and around on the shores of Lake Ontario. So we'll see how that goes.
Uh-huh. Got to get out there.
Yep.
Alrighty. That's all I got this week. So if you want to find out more about us, go to paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com to stream or download all our episodes. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.